been on. Recorded me through the journey of the... Yes. Phantom P.
And we will
That's
have,
it?
You want to announce it?
Oh.
We will have the... Oh, you're good.
Sarah. Okay.
Do you want us to talk about the recording or do that?
Oh, just so everybody knows, we ask the speaker each and every month if they care to be recorded. Yeah. Usually they say yes. I think we've had somebody say no, but...
Nina.
She shall be posted up on our website probably, well, Gordon...
By tomorrow.
Okay.
Maybe tonight.
Well, that's quick.
We're good.
Okay, so no time to hide and say I pass.
Yeah.
Okay, so now am I on?
Yeah.
Dun, da, da, da. Watch out now. No, Joanne, alcoholic.
Yo.
I am really grateful to be here. And when you asked me, I was like surprised. So I was like, yeah, okay, sure, I'll do it. But thank you. When people ask me, it's a true, true honor for me because I started from the bottom, now I'm here. So for somebody to actually listen and get something from my experience, strength, and hope is a gift in itself. So I started my journey very young, and sometimes I try to like go, oh, my childhood was always so horrible and, you know, all this stuff, but I can remember good times, you know, when we lived with my grandpa, you know, my mom, Christmas, you know, getting the bike I wanted, going out with my uncle and aunt, you know, but I was very young. So when my grandmother died, my mom's life changed. So when my mom's life changed, my life changed. And my dad took off when I was very young, and he wasn't very dependable, but I always knew who he was. It wasn't like I didn't know who he was. I knew who he was. And so my mom decided that she was going to go off the rails and do a lot of hurtful things to herself. And so it affected me. So in the third grade, I became the straggly kid that was lice and smelled like cigarette smoke. That's what people used to call me. And I never had to go to school. You know, I remember I looked at my report cards recently and I had missed like 63 days, 33 days. So nothing was really important for me to do. My mom was just winging it, and she didn't really care what I did, how I did it, where I did it, or anything. So at 11 years old, I thought I had the weight of the world on my shoulders. And I can remember feeling like, wow, you know, how did I get like this? And how did I feel, why do I feel like this? And I used to feel like I wasn't enough because we lived in a really, I don't want to say poor, but, you know, a neighborhood. And where I went to school at was my grandpa's address, so it was like the rich people in Vacaville. And so nobody was ever allowed to come over. No, I always had to go to their house. It was like everybody talked about how horrible it was where I lived, what it was like there, and everything. So I internalized that and said, okay, you know, I'll show you. So at 11 years old, I just picked up and drank Bacardi 151. And I was like, who gave me this? And that was a blackout. So my first drunk is a blackout, and my last drunk is a blackout. And I don't remember nothing that happened either one of those nights. So everything in between is like, wow, girl, whoa, you're a little raunchy. You know, like you do anything for some alcohol. So my mom didn't get mad at me. The next day we went and seen Clueless. Cause I was born in 1982, so some of you have been sober longer than I've been alive, you know. And I think about like how it made me feel, and how I could escape, and all the harm that had been done to me, and all the things that I was going through. It wouldn't matter no more because I can float away, and I did. I left home. See, it's kind of sad. You'd be like, oh God, that's like horrible. My first sponsor was like, whoa, you had a rough life. But it is what it is. I didn't want to be home no more. I didn't trust my mom, and my mom wasn't really trustworthy. And my dad was nowhere to be found unless my mom would call him and he would come whoop me because I was being bad or something. So I left. And my mom decided to get clean after I left. And I was done with her by then. You know, so I didn't want to come home. And she was search for me. Search. And I can remember her knocking on doors looking for me. And I would say, don't tell my mom I'm here. And this is when I'm 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, you know, around those ages. So it was what it was. I ended up in San Francisco, Oakland, Richmond, Vallejo. Vallejo was my favorite place to go at first. It was like, wow, this is nothing like Vacaville. Vacaville was like a cow town. I don't know if anybody knows how Vacaville was in the 90s, but it was very boring. So my first stop was Fairfield because they had the mall. And then my next stop was Vallejo. And then my next stop was Richmond. I was like, oh, this is fancy. I like this place. And then I got introduced to East Oakland. I said, oh, we have hit the lottery. And me and my friend Amanda used to be out there all the time. And then I found San Francisco. And when I found San Francisco, I really thought I had arrived. You know, I was like, wow, this is going to work for me. You know, I like this. You know, you can do anything out here. Nobody says nothing to you. Nobody said nothing. And so that went on for a while, and I was in and out of jails all the time. I remember when I turned 18, they made me go serve my juvenile hall term because I had time to still do for somebody who was underage, and I couldn't do it at the jail, so I was in the San Leandro Juvenile Hall for some months to finish it out. And then after that, I had met a man, you know, and that was my man. And we were wild, and we did a lot of criminal activity. So he was like, we should run away. And I said, where are we going? And I didn't want to go. But he's like, we should go to West Virginia. I said, oh. And then I thought about it. I said, I can go to West Virginia and nobody won't know me. See, what's in the big book, I never knew that was me. Because when I first got here, I said, look at all these old people. My sponsor was old, okay? But I remember thinking, like, that has nothing to do with me or nothing. But I did every single thing that was in there. And I never, ever tried to get help or want help. But I did everything that was in there. Tried different things, moved far away, different jobs. I had, like, 17 different jobs. You know, I just switch. But wherever I went, there I was, and I could not understand that. So when I got to West Virginia, I said, I'm going to reinvent myself. Oh, God. It was really like nobody knew who I was. And I worked for America Online, and does everybody know who AOL is? Jesus. So I did an interview, and somebody asked me, where did I work before the Goodwill? And I was like, oh, America Online. These youngsters had no idea what I was talking about. I said, oh, God, am I that age now? Jesus. So I worked for them, and then my life went to, like, right back to where it was, Mad Dog 2020. You know, I was like, I could never afford nothing, so I stole everything, you know. And I was, like, crazy out there. You know, I was crazy because nobody knew who I was. And they are really slow out there. So I took my California mentality out there, and I thought I could get away with anything. And right when I was about to destroy my whole life, I decided to come back to California and destroy it. You know, so this is like 2003. So from 1982 to 1990, it was like, oh, this is a good life. You know what I'm saying? And then once 92 hit, I was like, oh, alcohol is going to be my best friend and everything else because I'm a garbage can. But once I pick up alcohol, I do anything. That's how I know I have a definite problem with alcohol. Number one. Because it's like my gateway, you know, to like lose all ambition, say yes, never say no. I'm just open to anything, turn into Pamela Anderson, seriously. So I was down for anything. And so when I got back from West Virginia, it was bad. And I was getting really, really strange things for change. I was like, because I was on drugs too, really bad. You know, really bad. I got introduced to e-pills when I was in West Virginia, and I thought that was my savior, you know, another thing. Just everything was just going to save me. And I was so afraid, but I was, like, so bold. Does that make sense? I was afraid, but I would drink and use to just get through anything. And my son had died, and I blamed myself for that because I shoulda, coulda, woulda, had so many chances to do these things. And every time I drank, I got a DUI. You know, I don't know why I was, every time I drank, I collected DUIs. West Virginia to here, I was just collecting them. And I was just drinking and drinking and out in the streets and all the stuff that comes along with it. And then I hook up with these strange people in Fairfield. And I'm like, yes, you know. So I move in with this lady named Betty. And I'm hanging out with this guy. And we're in the Crest. We're over here. We're over there. And we separated for one night. And I was like, I'm going to go to Fairfield to the bar. And he went somewhere else in Vallejo. And crap you not. I'm trying not to cuss because I'm being recorded. Trying to be a little bit more ladylike, okay? It might shock me, Nina said. So I'm trying to really compose myself. No. So when I went to the bar on North Texas, I always brought my alcohol with me because, you know, I'm not paying for, that's too expensive. Who pays for that? You know, I haven't got time for that. My Taka vodka can go in my pocket, you know. I was like, whatever I could get. And, I went into the bathroom and I don't remember nothing else. The last thing I remember is walking into the bathroom of that bar and I don't remember nothing else except for my friend yelling in my ear, JoJo, you're on the wrong side of the road. So I still don't know what happened, but I've read the police report and it's not pretty, you know, and my last DUI was 0.38. I was on a mission, you know. I always went on a mission. I don't know about you, but when I drank, you know. It was like, now I know one was never enough. You know, I had to have literally I had to have it. And if I had a gallon of gin, I'm finishing it. So, you know, moving on from that, I'm like lost. So my last DUI was my last drunk. And I swear I didn't plan it. That was not in my plans, okay? So I woke up with a suicide smock on and a vent to pee in. And I had no idea how I got there. And I was like, what's going on? And I was dying from alcoholism. I was shaking so bad, but they couldn't put me nowhere because I was going crazy at the same time, I guess. I have no idea. So after there, I went to the hospital. And I remember I wanted to get high so bad. And they handed me some pills, and my hand was shaking like this. And I was like, what's in there? You know, and they were said a volume. I said, yes, didn't get me high. Did not get me high. I was disappointed as heck. And I was in there with another lady. She said, gosh, you're detoxing. She's like, just calm down. I was like, what? And I had no idea because I didn't really know nothing about that. I didn't care about none of that. I just drank. And, after that, I thought I would get to go home. No, they was like, no. And, the guy who I was supposed to hang out with that night, he's in prison right now for 25 to life. So I could have went that way, right? Yeah. So, they're like, you got to do some time. And I'm like, no, my mom got me and nobody wanted me to come home. That was the first time now looking back that nobody wanted me. I was too much, you know, and I didn't even know that. And, so I was like, all right. So I did some time for the stuff I did. And it was right before all that DUI stuff kicked in. I'm right on time, I swear. Cause it's really vicious now when you get a DUI. So, all of mine were right on time. So, I collected a few in West Virginia, but that never followed me. I don't know why, you know, but out here I had got 3 within 4 months. And, that was not enough, but that's what I got. And, it's amazing because I wanted to drink so bad. And, H and I would come into the jails and I would get so mad at them for thinking that they could come tell me anything. Like, you know, and I would be so mad at this lady, so mad at her for coming in, Barbara. And I was like, how dare she think she can do anything for me? She's old, you know, because I was 25 when I got locked up. I was young, you know, too young to get sober. I got my whole life ahead of me, you know, that's crap. So I spent a little time in jail and then they were like, there's programs and everybody wanted to go to a program. And my roommate said, don't waste it. I said, you're right. I'm not going to waste it. I swear. So I was like, why waste it? I don't want to go. And some man came to visit me and he said, you're going to die from your alcoholism. And I said, I don't do drugs no more. You know, I don't smoke crack. You know, I was like, how do you, that's a lie. I'm not doing heroin. You know, like that was my mentality. You can't die. And he's like, no, you're going to die from alcoholism. And he's like, your mom reached out to me and said, you need a program. And I was like, what? And I was like, how dare she think she could come save my life? I can't stand that lady. You know, what she did to me, she ruined everything. You know, this is my mentality. How dare she? You know, how dare she think she can help me? And she came to visit me in jail and was like, JoJo, because a lot of people call me JoJo, but my mom does. She's like, you just need to go to a program. And I remember being so mad at her for thinking that that was the right decision. I wanted to come home, be on an ankle bracelet, something else, you know, go to an outside program. But none of that was for me. It was either do a little bit more time or a program. So I remember thinking I was going to have to go to Delancey Street. And I was like, oh, God, I've heard, like, girls were talking about it. And I was like, I don't want to go there. And I was like, I'll go to Santa Cruz. Well, that was my best plan. Because I was going to drink on the beach. And it was going to be fancy, finally. You know, I mix it up, get a bikini on. You know, Pamela Anderson, when I'm drunk, I had big plans. And they said, no, you're going to Shamea House. I said, huh? And I had heard about Shemaiah House too. And I said, I am not going there. I said, there's 18 women in there. And we had, and you have to cook, clean, watch people's children? Watch people's children. I don't like children. My son died out of resentment. You know, I don't want to watch nobody's children. And they're like, well, that's where you're going. And I said, huh. And my roommate Dawn was going too. She had left a little bit before me. So I was like, all right, cool. At least I'll see Dawn there. But I didn't want to go. So by the time came to go, I was like, I'm not going. I had made up my mind. They can't hold me there. You know, once I get there, I can leave. I mean, this is from Fairfield to Vallejo. And as soon as I came over the thing, I was like, yes. And I had a big plan. I only owned a nose ring and hoops. I had the gel stuff on because I owned nothing. Nothing. I mean, I was gutter. Nothing. I'd have used underwear, you know, like represent. It got real low, and I liked the low until I didn't like the low no more. And I had a plan. So I was going to go to the corner of Tennessee and Tuolumne to that liquor store and get me a shot of E&J. I loved E&J. Brandy made me crazy, sexy, cool, you know, like, I swear, I thought all type of things. And I had no money, so how am I going to get it, you know? I was like, I'll panhandle. I got this. I give sob stories, you know. Oh, I'm stranded out here. Somebody please save me. That's the type of stuff I used to do to get money from people. And when I got to Shemaiah House, I went inside, and I didn't want to leave. There was these two women sitting there, and they were magical, and I didn't want to leave. Miss Brenda was my, it was just like, and Patrice. And I said, wow. And I looked around and it was this home. And I never, like looking back now, I know I'd never seen a home like this. You know, it was just like everybody was just calm, cool, and collective. Nobody was cussing each other out. No yelling, no screaming, no nothing. It was just like a safe moment. But I didn't know that then, but I know that now. And I got to stay because I don't have arson. You know, if you have arson, it's really bad for you. So I was actually allowed to stay, but I had to tell them that if I stayed, I would do the best I can. No, but I told them it's up to me how my life turns out from here. Where did that come from? You know, where did that come from? So I was like, oh. And I wanted to leave right after that because it was time to do group. It was time to cook. It's like time to do this. You can only have coffee in the mornings. You know, you can. It was so much structure. And I was like, I don't know how to deal with structure. And all the women always wanted to go home. And I was like, I'll go home. You know, and they gave us this pink piece of paper to pick a sponsor off of. I said, I'm not doing that. So everything was like, you know, I'm just going to stay. And I went on my first pass, and when I got to my mom's house, I said, oh, my God, I'm going to die if I stay out here. I have to go back to that program, and I have to stay. And I remember that feeling of being so uncomfortable in my skin that I would have did anything for that uncomfortableness to go away. So what am I going to do? And I didn't know that then, but I know that now. And I made a very, very good choice with whatever had my back at that moment. And I said, I'm going back to this Shemaiah House. And I went back and I jumped in. Shit you not. Both feet. Could have belly flopped, you know, because I didn't know what I was doing. And I picked a sponsor. I started doing chores. I'll watch your baby, you know. I'll walk around the thing. And I started enjoying it. And I started, like, having these friendships and these connections with all these women. Women from my school. Like, we went to school together and elementary would show up. And it was just like this camaraderie of women. And then we were able to go to the Vallejo Fellowship, and I found a man. Okay. I thought I found a man. I was like, oh, this is the perfect place for us to come every Monday morning. I love it. But it introduced me to a whole new way of life. You know, we could only walk on one side of the street. It was very structured back then. And we had to do this, and you got to clean. You got to make sure you're doing your chores. You got to go to bed on time. And it was brush your teeth twice a day. Oh, I never did that before. I'm like, what? So I did all that. And that was the first beginning where I fell in love with being safe and staying sober. And I could not believe it. So I was like, well, what do I do now? I have nowhere to go after here, you know. And they had a sober living. So I wrote a letter because I had to prove to them that I was able to go to their sober living. And I wrote a letter, and they let me in. And Ernest helped me with that, another member of the Vallejo Fellowship. I used to go to the noon meetings because all the girls would go home, and I would be at the house sometimes alone because I'd had nowhere to go. So I spent a lot of time at the fellowship and got to know people. And I was like, I had nothing else to do. So I was like, can I go to a meeting? Yeah, check yourself out. So I was able to get into sober living, and I had no money. And I could not get a job because of my background. So there were two ladies that I was in the house with, and those ladies carried me, deodorant, anything that I needed. And then finally, my friend's husband said, I'll hook you up with a job with the Goodwill. And I said, really? And so I got the job. And after I got the job, I said, well, if I get hired on permanently, because back then it was an apprenticeship, I said, I'll go get me in my own place and do things. So rewind, this whole time I'm hanging out with Jackie. That's my sponsor, my first sponsor, Jackie. And when she showed up, she was old as dirt to me. I was like, what can she give me? Absolutely nothing. She is too old. I am young. I know everything. What can she do? And that was the first person to show me what it was to actually live sober. I was like, wow, this is impressive. You know, I was impressed by what she walked with. And I learned a lot from her, but I was still wild, I will tell you. It was very hard once I got sober to change who she is, actually. I had to learn. I think this whole time I've been sober, I've been learning how to actually be a productive member of society. There was no way in my first year I was a productive member of anything. My fifth year, nope. I was doing mad, crazy stuff. It didn't take until about my 10th year of being sober for me to say, wow, I could actually act like a lady maybe. Let me not have a man. You know, let me pause. Because I had a daughter. I didn't even know who her dad was. I mean, it's crazy because I didn't know how to behave once the alcohol was gone. And just because somebody who was showing me was doing it, I had to learn for myself what feels good and what doesn't. And I was able to finally learn that. And she walked me through the steps straight out of the big book. We did it just as the big book does. And when she passed away, I was like, oh, I got this. I remember thinking that, oh, I don't need this program. I got plenty of stuff under my belt. I went to meetings. I was general chair. I was a secretary. I remember thinking that I will be perfectly fine. So I started working a lot, and I got away from the program. And that was about 5 years in, and I was wild. That was like crazy, and I was inviting strange people to my house, same behaviors except for I wasn't drinking. And I had a daughter and strange people in the house. I was letting people use my car. I was stealing. I mean, it was like insanity. And I remember thinking, if I don't change, I'm going to die. And then I had two kids, and then my daughter died. This is like all in a 5-year period. It was wild. And I didn't drink. And I didn't heal from my daughter. You know, she sits in my drawer. So I'm like, ooh, you know, I'm crazy even now. And, I remember thinking, I'm going to die, but I want to die. And you know, I don't want these children no more either. They're in my way. But on the outside, everybody thought I was living my best life because I'm a good pretender. You know, I'm very good at pretending. How are you? I'm okay. So, those children almost went off the Carquinez Bridge. That's where my mind took me. And then I was like, I'm going to go get my tubes tied and get some narcos. You know, I'm like crazy. That's all I wanted was some narcos. And then that's when I realized that, oh my gosh, you know, I was like, I better do something. But I was like, no, I don't want to do nothing. So I did nothing. I lost my job. I actually quit it. Told them to go F. I was like, oh, everybody go fuck themselves. I'm crazy. So I lost a job. The house went bye-bye. We were almost homeless. I'm wondering, what are we going to do? Raymond looked at me like devastated. And that was the first time that I realized, wow, my behaviors affect my family. Because I never had that before. When I was out before, I didn't have nobody. It was just me. So I didn't think I affected nobody, not knowing my mom, my sister, my dad, whatever. But that was the first time where somebody looked at me disappointed. Like, what happened? And he has no idea. Because I'm not going to tell him. You know, I want to leave him anyway with the children and go to Italy. You know, I have big plans. I'm crazy. And I didn't do it. I'm walking down the street with my kids, pushing them in a stroller. A lot of people know I used to have because my kids are gangster twins. They're like 9 months apart. So I used to bring I had a two stroller. So we would walk around Vallejo, drop my daughter off at Lincoln, come back up Springs Road. And this guy walked past me who never gets my name right. Used to call me all type of names, Christy, Karen, everything but my name. And Larry looked at me and said, hi, Joanne. And I was like, a what? And I looked at him and I was like, I wonder how Steve is doing. That was my first thought because he used to drive by me and say, get your ass to a meeting almost every day. And I was like, I wonder how he's doing. Maybe I should go there, Mikey, Jose. I started naming all these people. I'm like, And that morning, I packed my kids up. So you never know when something might save you from yourself, you know. And I was blocked off from the sunlight of the Spirit massively. But that little bit of, like I always tell people, it seems so dark, you know, that tunnel seems so dark. But if you look closely enough, there's something. It doesn't matter how big it is, it's something. And that's what Larry was for me. He was that tiny dot at the very end when I felt like I was about to quit. He said, absolutely not. Let me show you. So I packed my children up and we hung out at the fellowship every morning. And we were disruptive and we were all the things. And nobody asked me to leave, because if they would have asked me to leave, I would have drank. You know, I can admit that I needed that again. And I got a sponsor instantly, and I started working the steps instantly. I got into service instantly. And once again, booyah, saved me from myself. You know, I get ungrateful all the time until I reflect and realize where I have been, what has happened, and what it is like now. You know, my sponsor taught me, tomorrow never comes, because once you open your eyes, you're in today. So what are you so worried about? Stay where your feet are planted, Joanne. So right now, I just had my 18th birthday of being sober. So you are never too young and you are never too old. You know, if I would have said, oh, I'm too young, I would have died. Or I'd be in prison right now. I sit next to people who say, oh, I just got out. I did 28 years. And I think about, oh, my God, that could have been me. Get grateful, Joanne. You know, I work the steps. It's funny because I hear people say my sponsor knows who I am. Trust me, Patricia knows me. I think I can do it alone a lot. But what I realize is I can't. And without the steps, I would lose my mind, because it helps me reflect on who I am. See, the thing is with me is not who I was, it's who I am. And that girl, little girl, doesn't have to act like that no more. We can act like a lady. That young lady doesn't have to act like that no more. We can have some dignity. You know, that young adult doesn't have to do those things no more. We can be Joanne. We don't have to fake it to make it. We are actually doing it. So step one, let me know. I was absolutely powerless. And to have children, you're really powerless, okay? But it let me know also people, places, and things. And then my life ain't unmanageable. That's impossible. I didn't even have nothing. But it was totally unmanageable from the time I was 11 to the time I was 25. That drinking took everything from me that I was supposed to gain. Learning skills, coping skills, relationship skills. How do I communicate? How do I talk to people? How do I treat people? Drinking took all that in that time frame. So now I get to do that. So, you know, step two, came to believe. That's hard, but we do it. That's why I tell myself, we do it. You know, make a decision. What decision am I going to make? Do the right thing, no matter what. And sometimes the right thing is only don't pick up. And then other times it's like, wow, the right thing is just everything I did today. I rocked it. You know, and then, you know, doing a fourth step, I just let it all out. You know, it's funny because my sister almost found it, and my sister is my favorite person. You know, above all, I know a lot of people above my children and all, but my sister is. And I did a lot of stuff to her that she doesn't know. So I treat her so well. Every time she picks up, calls me, I pick up. She just texts me right now, I love you. The other day she was watching a show and the woman was an alcoholic, and she called me just to tell me she's proud of me. You know, because she's seen it all. So those are the rewards of step four or five. And then I get to admit, like, you know what? I had a lot of ego because I thought I was invincible to the world. Now I just crush it a little bit, but I still have it. It's like this balance of everything will be okay, you know. And prayer and meditation is just, I swear, it's so funny. I get up in the morning, I'm like, wow, this is awesome. And then I go outside and I'll see the moon and I'll be like, wow, this is truly awesome. And then I'll come out and I'll see the sunset. I'm like, oh. This just knocked me on my back. You know, it's like little things like that that really show me that there's something really magical. And I think it's crazy because I had a hard time with the higher power. Step 11 was, you know, I have no problem with 10. I can reflect, you know, I can blame you still, but then take some accountability at the end of the night. I could do all that. But when it came to step 11, I was like, ew, that sounds a little too much for me. But I had to grow into it. I realized it doesn't have to come easy for you, Joanne. And my friend told me one time, it doesn't have to be so personal. You know, it doesn't have to be like the first date. Like, it just relax, you know, and let it come. And it has came and knocked me on my back. There's times where I think, absolutely not. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I can. And it happened, you know. So the spiritual awakening is just everything. I used to try to pinpoint, it's just everything. So what I try to do is give back to let you know if I can do it, you can do it. Because we do recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind, body, and soul. Not just what I think. And if I want it, I can have it. I think that's the most greatest thing is if I want it, I can have it. And meetings are the first level of service. If you listen real closely, you can find a whole lot of things in there. A sponsor and a whole bunch of support group. You know, took me forever to go to concerts, but I go to concerts now. I dance even though I have no rhythm. You know, I never thought I would be able to do things without alcohol, and bam, here we are. So I want people to know that if you can say you're a member when you say you're a member, you know, and if you have a problem with alcohol, you are definitely right in the right place. And if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length and get that honesty cracking, because once you get honest, it gets real, and then you love it, and then you can feel it, and then you can accept it, and then you can say, okay, this bitch is amazing. You know, I just want you guys to know that it, everything will be okay as long as I stay sober. So thank you. How long did I go? Not that long. Okay, I did good.
Thank you very much. Everybody, another hand for
Jennifer. Oh.